We'll hear argument this morning in Case 08310, Polar Tankers versus City of Valdez. Mr. Rothfeld.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. The Valdez vessel tax violates the Constitution's tonnage clause because it operates as a charge on the privilege of trading in Port Valdez. And that tax is apportioned in a way that is guaranteed to tax extraterritorial values and values that do not have a connection to the city. That violates the due process and commerce clauses.
It's not often that we have disagreements as to the basic facts. The red brief says that the tax in question constitutes 11% of the tax base. And you talk about that in the reply brief. Can you spend just a little bit of time at the outset telling us your views of this tax? And although it's the respondent's statement, not yours, do you think 11% of the tax base means 11% of what's collected under this tax or under all taxes imposed by the City of Valdez?
Well, I think that it means all taxes that are imposed not only by the City of Valdez, but they're including taxes that are imposed by the State of Alaska that are collected by the City of Valdez.
In which case, that seems really quite irrelevant.
That is our position. We think that's absolutely right. I think it's useful to focus on the nature of this tax. It is a tax that is directed exclusively at vessels and not at all vessels. It's by exempting small boats and all boats that are engaged in commercial fishing and all boats that dock exclusively at city-owned harbors. This is a tax, a property tax. It's called a property tax, but it's a tax that falls only on vessels and is directed at those vessels.
Well, some of those vessels, I take it, are taxed under other statutes. Is that correct?
I think not. I think that so far as Valdez is concerned, the vessels we're talking about are subjected simply to this property tax.
Well, do you take the position, let's say, that if the State of Alaska taxed all the other property you had mentioned except for the tankers, and the city taxed the tankers, that would, by definition, be a discriminatory tax and or on some other basis violate the tonnage clause?
Well, that would be quite a different situation than what we have here.
Well, the reason I raised it was that in your response to my first question, you said, well, you didn't think the city was taxing these other pieces of property. And I'm not sure why that is significant.
Well, there's a huge universe of personal property that could be taxed in the city of Valdez. Valdez has the authority to tax all of this property except for a discrete category of oil and gas property that is subject to taxation by the state. So Valdez can tax all of the ordinary kinds of personal property, movable property, personal thing, that any jurisdiction can tax. They can tax cars and trucks and moving vans and refrigerators and jewelry. Of all of those innumerable things that they could tax, they have chosen to tax a single item. They've chosen to tax vessels. And as I said, not all vessels.
Yeah, but you want us to ignore the state tax. Do you really want us to do that? I mean, it'd be the easiest thing in the world for the State of Alaska, instead of imposing it at the state level, to authorize the municipality to do it. I don't want to have this case come back here for a second time.
But
now that the municipality is imposing the taxes that the state used to impose, don't you think you have to count both of them?
I don't think so. The State of Alaska treats oil and gas property.
You're going to get a fragile judgment then if we go on those grounds.
All it takes is a
modification of the legislation.
Not so, Your Honor, because the State of Alaska takes very seriously its stewardship of oil and gas property. That is something of tremendous fiscal importance to the State of Alaska. I think that there is little practical risk that the state is going to assign the right to tax that property.
How about the risk in the other direction, that the state will simply take over this tax and remit the proceeds to the city? Would the result, on your view, be the same if it did that?
The result, in my view, would be the same, but that would be a different and more difficult case. Here, focus on what Valdez is doing. It has the authority, as I said, to tax the entire universe of personality in the city of Valdez. It has chosen to tax only particular types of vessels that are used in the export of oil. Imagine
there are some other vessels, too. It's the oil tankers and there are a few other vessels that would be included.
Including a cruise ship is covered.
There is one cruise ship, Your Honor, that was caught up in the net in the first year the tax was imposed. Otherwise, the tax falls exclusively on what vessels that are involved in the export of oil, principally tankers, but also service
vessels. Why does that matter? I mean, do you concede that if this tax were in some sense non-discriminatory, you would lose?
No, I think that —
Why are we having all this talk about — in other words, you think if there was a tonnage tax applicable to everything, you know, your pickup truck holds 2 tons, it's got to pay a certain amount, whatever, then do you lose or win?
If a tonnage tax — look at what the tonnage tax was initially designed to do. The framers chose the term duty of tonnage because at the time the tonnage clause was written in the late 18th century, tonnage was the ordinary way of valuing the value of a ship and the ordinary way of imposing a tax on the ship. If the city of Valdez were to impose a property tax measured by tonnage on everything, on vans and trucks and refrigerators and ships, that would be a difficult case for us. But obviously it hasn't done that. It has not imposed a tonnage tax, and it hasn't imposed a property tax on any other type of property except particular types of vessels. I think you apply the duck test. It looks like a duck. It quacks like a duck.
Yeah. I think you're giving up an awful lot. I mean, weren't the framers — couldn't they have been more concerned about making sure that there's a free flow of commerce, that ships go, and the fact that everything is taxed would be less of a concern to them? But you're willing to say that if it's non-discriminatory — even if you would call it a tonnage tax, you lose.
Well, I was using, in response to your previous question, imagining that they were imposing a property tax and they were measuring it in an unusual sort of way. And the Court has said that if there's a generally applicable property tax, which happens to fall on vessels, the reality of that tax is that it is a tax on property and not a tax on vessels. But here we have quite the opposite. Here we have a tax that falls only on vessels is targeted only at vessels. And you're quite right. The framers were concerned with the free movement of commerce. The tonnage clause was designed to close the loophole that was thought to be left by the import-export clause, which bars the taxation of imports and exports. Taxing vessels would be a way of circumventing that.
Let's assume that that a given tanker came into the harbor at Valdez on one occasion and one occasion only. Would the city of Valdez, under its own statutes, by the terms of its own ordinance, tax that ship?
It would, indeed, because the city, in its code creating the tax, conclusively presumes that a vessel is subject to the tax so long as it takes on cargo worth $1 million over the course of a year. Oil tankers...
Well, let me just change the question, then. If it came in and sort of took half a tank full that didn't reach the point of the $1 million value, there would be no tax then. Is that correct?
Well, it would have to take a lot less than half a tank full.
Whatever it would take to get it under the minimum.
Yeah, if it were not — if it visited the Port of Valdez once, took on less than $1 million, and never came back to the Port of Valdez.
Okay. Under the old tonnage laws, wouldn't that ship in the 18th century have been taxed?
I think that the jurisdictions imposed all kinds of different variations of tonnage duties. And as
the point that I'm getting to is, and I'd like you to address this, one of the arguments on the other side is that one reason this should not be treated as a tonnage tax is that it relies upon the concept of a tax situs. And the implication is that not every ship that comes into the harbor is going to be subject to the tax, whereas under the old tonnage laws, any ship that came in would be. And what is your response to that argument?
Well, two responses. First, I think it is not the case that under the old tonnage laws, necessarily every ship was subject to tax. Ships could be subject depending on how large they were. Some ships could be exempted. So I think it's not implicit in the nature of a tonnage duty that it applies to every ship that enters the harbor.
Where do we look to find this out?
I think one would have to look at the practice in the 18th and 19th century. And some of the courts.
Do you know of any source that we could look at to support the proposition that you just made?
I can't point you to any authority directly addressing that point, but I can point you to the general treatment of what a tonnage duty is. I mean, it's a duty which is imposed on vessels on the basis of tonnage. It does not have to be imposed on every vessel that enters the harbor. But I think probably the more important response to your question is the reality of this tax. Valdez knew what it was doing. It wanted to target. It was commendably candid in saying what it was doing. It wanted to target the vessels that were engaged in the transport of oil. It knows how big oil tankers are. It knows that the tankers are always full. then they come in, they take a full load of oil. That is the whole point of
but you don't suggest that it matters, right? You've talked to some extent in the briefs about the bad, evil motive.
No,
you're not going to suggest that the same tax could be valid or invalid depending on why it was enacted.
No, I don't. But I
ask one other question before you leave this, which is where Justice Kennedy started. Suppose a state says, in our state, we want to tax all oil and gas property. And here's how we do it. We assess the value of all oil and gas property, ships and everything else included. Then we impose a tax of 20 mils per dollar of assessed value, something like that, on all of it. Now, the state will collect all of it. And we make one exception. We define which property the state will directly get the money from, and then the city can do the rest if it wants. Now, here's what we do with the state money. We give it to the city. So if the state wants to, it can put the same tax on that little bit of property left over, which is a subcategory of oil and gas property. And by the way, the name of that little bit of property left over is called a ship. Now, is that a tonnage tax? And is that what Alaska has done here?
If I understand the example, that might be a tonnage tax, depending upon the extent.
I described to you the entire tax. We know no more about it.
Well, if it's a tax on oil and gas property, and that is sort of the definition of the tax, and it happens to fall on vessels as part of the
way it does is, just as I said, maybe I was — it's too much for you to take in. So the point is that it's a tax on oil and gas property. That's Code Section 1. Code Section 2 is defined subcategories, A, B, C, D, E, F, all of that. Code 3 says A, B, C, D, and E, the government, the state government collects and remits it to the city. G, the city can assess the same tax if it wishes. Doesn't have to. And keep the money. G is ships. And the reason I asked that question is I read something from the Alaska Department of Economic and Community Development, which suggested to me that that is Alaska's tax. I might have that wrong. I just read a sentence or two, and maybe I got it wrong that that's Alaska's tax. But if it is Alaska's tax, what's wrong with it? It's a tax on all oil and gas property, and all they do is they let the city collect some of that if they want, and they collect the rest of it and give it to the city.
Well, what's wrong with what's going on here, and I think this is an answer to your question, the city of Valdez has the authority to tax an entire, as I said, the entire universe of personality. And as you describe it, the city of Valdez also can impose a tax, although it doesn't have to, on vessels. And the city has chosen to single out vessels out of all the types of property that it could tax, and it imposes a tax on them. It's called a property tax. The reality of it is that it's a tax on vessels.
What I'd like to know is, do you think what I said was a misdescription? What's worrying me about this aspect of this case is a possible need to send it back to find out what Alaska's tax system is. Now if what I just said is a correct description approximately, and if the other side thinks it is too, then at least I know how to go about deciding it. And if I don't, I don't know quite what to do.
Well, my understanding of how the tax system works is that this is a state-level tax. Alaska determines what are subject to tax. It determines the items of property that are subject to tax. It determines which of these vessels are subject to the Alaska tax. It then allows the city of Valdez to collect the tax and to use the tax. But it is a tax imposed by law by the city of Alaska. Valdez has no discretion to tax things that are not oil and gas property that are not taxed by subject to the tax at the state level by the state.
As you understand it, with reference to the tax base referred to in the red brief, at page 14, where it says it's 11% of the tax base, is that tax base all city-imposed?
No. My understanding of what they're referring to is that this includes Alaska-taxed oil and gas property, including the Alaska oil pipeline and the oil terminal in the city of Valdez, which are enormously valuable pieces of property. So I think that we're talking apples and oranges here.
Was your answer to the Chief Justice that if there's a tonnage tax imposed on everything, including ships, it would still violate the tonnage clause? Is that right?
If it's a literal duty of tonnage on the cubic capacity of a ship, it's difficult to see how that could really be imposed in terms on every other item of property.
It's my hypothetical. I made it up.
Well, if the city were to say that every transportation, device of transportation, is going to be taxed on the basis of its cubic capacity, you know, vans and railroads.
Then you think it'd be okay?
I think that would be.
It's only discrimination that counts.
Well, we focus on — well, no, I would say — I would not say that it's necessarily okay. That would be a different kind of situation than we have here. Here, we have the purest case of what's of a tax which is focused exclusively on vessels.
Well, there's some fight about that, obviously. There is no fight about the fact that this tax is based upon how long the ship remains in port, right?
Well —
How many days?
Right. How many days it remains in port?
There are two aspects.
Which means it, the argument could go that this is obviously a tax for the use of the port. And that's exactly what the tonnage clause was directed against, preventing Philadelphia and New York from taxing the consumers in New Jersey by imposing taxes on ships that bring in goods.
I agree entirely with that. The effect of this tax is to tax essentially the charge for trading in the port of Valdez, and that is exactly what
And you don't dispute that in light of the benefits provided by Valdez to the ship owners, that there could be a legitimate tax on these vessels.
That is absolutely right.
Could you describe what tax authority you think Valdez has?
There are two ways that Valdez could go about taxing these vessels. It could impose a user fee, and the Court has recognized in its tonnage clause decisions that even a tax on cubic capacity, a tax on weight, would be fine if that is a user fee which is designed to pay for services that are provided specifically to vessels roughly equivalent to the value of the services provided. So that is one way Valdez could do it. A second way they could do it is to impose a non-discriminatory property tax. If they imposed a tax on the citizenry of Valdez affecting some broad array of personal property, that would impose the kind of political constraints that would discourage, you know, abusive export of the city's tax burden, which is just what the framers were.
How much property — you said if they taxed all movables, that would be okay. Could they have some exemptions and still?
It may. I suppose the test would be if it's predominantly focused on vessels, that would be unconstitutional. This case doesn't provide an opportunity to explore exactly how far that goes, because this is, as I say, the purest case of a tax, property tax, called a property tax, which applies only to vessels.
But you don't think a daily charge on vessels for remaining in port violates the tonnage clause?
That would violate the tonnage clause. Oh,
is this anything else than that?
I'm agreeing with you, Justice Scalia, that however ports, states, or cities go about trying to impose a tax on vessels for the, I'm calling the privilege of trading in the port, as distinct from the user fee discussed with Justice Ginsburg, that would be an unconstitutional tonnage duty. That's what the Court has said.
Even
if it's a flat fee,
the court
every has, vessel has to pay, you know, $1,000.
The Court has so held on several occasions that a flat fee violates
Mr. the Mr. Rothberg, can I ask you a question, just focusing on the tonnage clause, not the other elements of discrimination? If you assume that the tonnage clause was designed to protect New Jersey from being exploited by New York and perhaps other states because they don't have their own ports, why does that rationale have any application to this case? Because the only state that strips oil out of Alaska is Alaska. So there's no other state like New Jersey who could be harmed by the tonnage clause.
Well, the recipients of the property are being harmed. Valdez is taking it. This is really, I think,
What state is being discriminated against in the scenario we have before us today?
All of the states that are using the oil ship through Valdez are paying ultimately paying this tax. And this is what the framers were concerned about. The danger that
but you're saying it's an unduly onerous burden on the oil companies and their tankers, and they only ship oil out of Alaska.
Well, the concern that the framers had in putting the tonnage clause in the Constitution, as with the import-export clause, was that states with favorable port facilities were going to be imposing burdens, but taking advantage of their favorable geography to impose burdens that are going to be felt on other states. That is exactly what Valdez is doing.
Not felt by the other states, felt by the consumers in other states. Well, ultimately, it's not going to be the oil companies that pay this tax. It's going to be the purchasers of oil.
That's right.
All of whom are going to be outside of Alaska, since this oil is leaving Alaska, right?
That is exactly
neat
right.
Neat tax, get somebody else to pay your taxes.
That is precisely right, and that's just what the framers were concerned with when they put the tonnage clause into the Constitution. And if I may, I'll move to the apportionment issue in the case. I don't want to leave behind important questions on the tonnage.
Well, but just on the maybe this doesn't matter. I have seen the capacity of cargo planes described in terms of tonnage. Does this clause apply to those?
That is an interesting question. It was written to apply to ships simply because in the late 18th century, the only way of moving substantial amounts of cargo was by vessel. And I imagine that if the framers had in mind airplanes and railroads.
It is that we have an evolving constitution, after all.
Well, I'll leave that one alone, Your Honor. But,
sir.
But do you know, it's not an entirely frivolous point. I mean, do you know if states, localities where airports are located charge things that might be viewed as tonnage clauses on airplanes?
I don't know a definitive answer to that. Generally speaking, airplanes and other types of property are subjected to property taxes on the value and not on capacity. Although, as I said, the framers, I don't think, cared about capacity as such. They just cared about charges that were being imposed upon vessels that were going to be passed through, as Justice Scalia said, to the ultimate purchasers or sellers of the imports and exports that were in the vessel.
I thought you said earlier or implied earlier that we couldn't draw a distinction really between capacity and value because tonnage in the 18th century was simply a proxy for the value of the ship.
That's right, and I don't hope I haven't been.
So a value tax is going to run into the same problem
as
a tonnage tax.
That's right. And as to the Chief Justice's question, application to moving vans or cargo planes, the Court need not consider that here because this is the purest case. It is within the plain terms of the tonnage clause, the historical application of the tonnage clause. It's clear intent of the framers in writing the tonnage clause.
If the amount of the tax were measured by the number of sailors who were going to come ashore and the number of days they would be ashore, and a small port city wanted to recover the costs that they impose on municipal services. Would that be subject to the same flaw that you see here?
It would, although it might be possible for the city to impose some type of user fee calibrated in that direction. The court's cases refer to that tonnage principle applies to the number of passengers that the ship may carry or the number of crew members on the ship. If it's not a proxy for particular expenses that are imposed on the jurisdiction, as this conceitedly is not, that was not the Valdez intent in passing this tax, then it would be problematic under the tonnage clause. But I say again, we have here the clearest, easiest case under the tonnage clause. It is a tax that is designed exclusively of vessels that trade in the harbor. On the apportionment question, and I don't want to give short shrift to that because the Valdez tax is apportioned in a way that is guaranteed to impose a tax on values that are not present in the jurisdiction. Polar's tankers spend only a small part of the year in Valdez. They spend the rest of the time on the high seas or in other ports, either unloading oil or in dry dock. And therefore, everybody agrees the tax has to be apportioned. The ordinary way, and the way that this Court has approved for the apportionment of a tax on physical property, particular items of physical property, is straightforward. You would put in the numerator of the tax the number of days or the number of days spent in or number of miles traveled in the taxing jurisdiction. You put in the denominator 365, or total number of miles traveled everywhere. You multiply that fraction times the value of the property. And so, for example, if I have a transcontinental passenger train moving from New York to California, it spends 20% of its time in New York. New York can tax 20% of the value of the train. That is not how Valdez does it.
But that's the train is going to be someplace throughout its trip, unlike the ship that's going to be on the high seas.
That's right, but the Valdez theory does not depend upon the taxation or the taxability of the ship somewhere else. Valdez is simply saying that we are entitled to tax, not on the basis of physical presence in this jurisdiction at all. We're entitled to tax on some concept of where productive commercial activity takes place. And so it does not apportion on the basis of amount of time spent in the jurisdiction over the course of the year, which is the approach that the Court ordinarily has used. The Valdez approach is precisely the equivalent of New York saying, in my transcontinental train example, we're going to take into account only time spent in New York and Los Angeles loading and unloading passengers, and we're going to discount all of the rest of the year, all the rest of the time that the train has spent moving the passengers from place to place.
Who can tax for the time on the high seas?
This Court has held in the Central Railroad case that the taxing authority goes to the domicile, that for time when —
And the domicile here is Texas, is that right?
The commercial domicile is Texas. The corporation is incorporated in Delaware.
In either case, the no ship's berth in either Delaware or Texas, is that right?
These ships do not — that's right. I mean, the ship's berth in Texas. These
so you
ships
have
do not, but
the home port might have had in the — old days, the notion that's really where the vessels berthed. But nowadays, Delaware has very little to do with where the vessels are berthing and where they're being serviced.
Yeah, if I may, Ryan, I'll answer that question and sit down to reserve a little bit of time. You're right as to the physical location of the ship, but the jurisdiction, the authority of a non-domicile to tax has always been constrained by the, under the Due Process Clause by the physical location of the property. And so the fact that the property may or may not be subject to tax somewhere else does not give Valdez additional authority to tax property that's not present there. Now, the Court has said that the domicile, whether or not the property is present, is providing benefits to the owner of the property. And it's those benefits that justify the imposition of the tax for periods when it is not in any tax site is subject to tax by anybody else. And if I may, Your Honor, I'll reserve.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Olson.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, in the Wheeling case, this Court said it is too well settled to question that taxes upon vessels based upon their value as property, do not violate the tonnage clause. In fact, no ad valorem property tax has ever been held to violate the tonnage clause.
Well, it says vessels of all kinds are liable to taxation as property in the same manner as other personal property.
Yes, Justice Kennedy, precisely in the same manner as other ad valorem property taxes. Now, let me answer the question that both you and Justice Breyer particularly addressed, which was the oil and gas tax imposed with respect to much of the property in Valdez. Valdez taxes homes, it taxes oil and gas property, it taxes barges, it taxes cruises, it taxes all sorts of things just like every other jurisdiction does. The oil and gas tax that you asked about, Justice Kennedy, and you did too, Justice Breyer, is imposed, and there's no need to remand this case back to address this. It's in Section 43.56 of the Alaska Code. The state of Alaska imposes an oil and gas tax on property used in the oil and gas extraction, transportation, etc. business. But it also authorizes a city under Section 43.56 and 29.45, the city of Valdez may impose that tax as well. It's 2 mils. It's just like every other tax that's imposed in Valdez. These are taxes imposed on the same basis. If the city imposes the tax, which the city of Valdez does, then the tax by the state, that tax paid to Valdez, is a direct credit, dollar-for-dollar credit for the tax that would otherwise have to go to the state. So in the first place, I think it would make no difference, as suggested by your question, Justice Breyer, whether it was the state or the city that imposed the tax. The constitutional provision refers to states. States divide up their taxing authorities in various different ways. The fact is that the state of Alaska, through the city of Valdez, imposes a tax on lots of different things. This oil and gas tax that we're talking about consists of 60% to 70% of the revenue base of taxation for the city of Valdez. The ship tax on that actually applies to vessels which include the tankers, include barges, include a cruise ship, includes just Alaska ships and ships.
Not fishing ships, right? None of Valdez's fishermen have to pay this tax.
They don't have to pay this tax, Justice Scalia, but they pay other taxes. There's tax on the weight of fish, and there's tax on the value of fish, and there's fees. They use a different dock, and they pay taxes there too.
Yeah, but your answer, it seems to me, does put the issue squarely before us in the terms that the petitioner has presented. That is to say, sure, suppose you tax the vessel and you tax trailers and small vessels and a lot of other things, but as to all of the latter category, you have an exemption. So the only people that effectively pay the tax are the tankers.
No.
And I thought that was the way the case was presented.
No, that is not correct, if I understood your statement correctly. This oil and gas property, cranes, heavy equipment, fire engines, motor vehicles, everything else, including the people's homes in Valdez, get taxed.
But the people's homes, only if they're affixed to the property and they...
No, that's with respect to mobile homes.
Yes.
They are taxed as real property when they're affixed in that
right.
way.
Non-mobile homes aren't taxed as real property?
Cities may impose taxes as real property or personal property, Justice Scalia. Some states will tax mobile homes.
Now, the question is, what's imposed here? My understanding from the yellow brief, do you agree that the yellow brief is accurate in its factual descriptions, perhaps not in its conclusions that it draws?
No, Justice Kennedy. I've given you...
See, we have a problem with the facts here. My understanding of the case, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that, sure, Valdez has a tax authority and tax statutes which would cover a considerable amount of personal property on an ad valorem basis. But because of exemptions, only the tankers pay this tax.
There are various taxes imposed by Valdez on personal property and real property.
Was my statement correct?
Your statement is correct only with respect to the ordinance that eliminated the exception. These big ships that impose enormous burdens on the municipality, you can only imagine what 300-400
That's
ships...
a different argument.
Yes, I know.
Can we just get to...
But these ships were exempt from taxation in Valdez until the year 1999, when that ordinance that you're referring to, Justice Kennedy, was adopted. It eliminated...
So was all other personal property exempt from taxation. They didn't have a personal property cap, right?
Except under the to the extent that personal property was covered by the oil and gas tax, the provisions that I've referred to, Valdez had been imposing that.
That's nicely targeted as well, but there's no constitutional impediment to targeting the people of New Jersey through taxing the oil equipment.
If the Wheeling case is correct and the other cases that have repeatedly said this, there is no constitutional impediment for a city or a state to impose a property tax on property being used.
But Wheeling was a general property tax, and as I read the case, it says if you're going to tax property, you can include vessels. This statute, and I think the Alaska Supreme Court treated it discreetly, is a tax on one kind of property only, these vessels. I don't know of any other property tax that is confined to just one type of property. Is there a comparable tax that is focused on a single category of property?
I think my point here with respect to this, Justice Ginsburg, is I don't know the answer specifically to that question, but we're looking at what the bundle of taxes that a community or a state imposes on property used that imposes a burden on the community. Property is taxed for the purpose, so that the property owner will bear the burden of the governmental services that a city has to impose. There's no constitutional provision that I'm aware of that says that you have to have it all in one statute, collective, and there's no discrimination.
But you can't make vessels bear the overall burden of municipal governance. You can make them bear the burden of the services provided to them in harbor, but you cannot make them the instrument of funding other municipal services. That's what the tonnage clause means.
Well, I disagree in part with what you said with respect, Justice Scalia. These vessels pay 11% of the revenue base for the city, 11%. This is a city of 4,500 people.
How do you define revenue base?
This is the amount of tax collected by the city of Valdez with respect to ad valorem taxes in the city, including ships, mobile homes, cranes, barges, appliances, real property, and so forth.
You're counting the state tax as well, right?
Pardon me?
You're counting the state tax on oil equipment.
I'm saying to you that the state imposes a tax, but the state specifically allows Valdez to impose that very tax.
That makes matters worse.
Valdez imposes that tax as a part of its total taxation.
Let's suppose I accept just what Justice Ginsburg said. And said it's a hopeless morass if we look at all taxes. Let's look at this tax. This tax you call an ad valorem tax on personal property levied by Valdez. And then on page 11 of your brief, you say that's not just on ships. It's also on mobile homes, trailers, recreational vehicles, and various types of personal property defined under state laws, oil and gas property, motor vehicles, machinery, appliances, supplies, and maintenance equipment. They come back and they say, as to your mobile homes, trailers, and recreational vehicles, all that's happening there is either you've exempted them or they're fixed in place and they're like real property and that's what you're doing. As to the other things, you do not impose a tax on those other things. Rather, the state imposes a tax on those other things, and it may be that you help the state do it by providing them with the assessment, and it may be even that you could do it. But you haven't. And therefore, the only thing you have imposed this tax on are the ships. Now, I think I have that argument right. If I do, what's the answer to it?
The answer is Section 43.56 that allows the state statute may impose that tax that you just described, and Section 29.
May impose doesn't help if you don't do it.
Yes, it does impose it. And then, Justice Breyer, Section 29.45080 says, and I'm going to read it exactly. This seems to be an important point. It doesn't seem to me that it ought to make any difference from the tonnage clause standpoint, whether it's a tax imposed by the state or a subdivision of the state. But this provision specifically says, a municipality may levy and collect taxes on taxable property taxable under AS 43. That's the one. The state does impose this tax, but it also allows the city to impose it. This city does impose it. And when it is paid, that is a credit against what might otherwise be owed to the state. So the city does impose that tax, it does collect that tax, and that tax is not paid.
Wait a minute, owed to the state for what? What would it owe to the state? No, it's still a state tax, and they're the collection agent. And it's a credit against what they owe for their collections, right?
A municipality may levy and collect taxes on property under this section. The city levies and collects those taxes. Now,
what's it a credit against? I don't understand.
The state also imposes the liability. Any individual community in Alaska may impose that tax itself. If it does, Valdez does, then you don't have to pay it to the state. You pay it to the city. So it's a city tax.
Now, does the city get a credit against
The taxpayer, once he pays $10 to the city under this tax, doesn't have to pay $10 to the state under this tax because he gets a credit.
I thought it was the city that got the credit.
No, it is the taxpayer that gets the credit. The city levies the tax, the city collects the tax, and then the taxpayer doesn't have to pay the state.
And now, that happens with all these other properties. That is, in Valdez, you pay the city for the for the taxes on that oil and gas property that isn't shipped.
Yes, Justice Breyer.
Write the check to the city.
What? Pardon?
All the things you listed on page 11.
Yes.
The oil and gas, motor vehicles, machinery, appliances, supplies, and maintenance equipment.
Those are money paid to the city.
So they write a check to the city. Okay.
Yes. Now, it shouldn't matter. The tonnage clause prohibits states from imposing a tonnage tax.
That's exactly the question I wanted to ask you. Supposing the city did not impose any taxes on anybody except the people who pay this tax, and that's all, would it be constitutional or unconstitutional?
No, it would not be. In the first place,
it would not be constitutional.
It would not be unconstitutional, Justice Stevens.
But then why is the what other people pay on other taxes even relevant?
I don't think it is relevant. The non-discrimination issue has been introduced by the petitioner in this case. It is not in the tonnage clause. It is not in any of the cases decided by this court having to do with the tonnage clause, having to do with wharfage fees, pilotage fees, other things having to do with commercial activity in a
so we can take as a given for the purpose of analyzing the issue that this tax is either the only tax that's relevant to our analysis or that it's so much higher than all the other taxes it should be treated as the functional equivalent as the only tax we have to look at.
I'm saying that it would not make any difference if this was the only tax that the city imposed unless it was a tonnage tax. And the tonnage tax, this Court has repeated.
But the answer to Justice Stevens' question is we can take this case as presenting to us the fact that the ships pay more than other property.
No.
You say that doesn't make any difference.
No, the ships do not pay more. I don't think it would make any difference if the city decided to impose a different rate of tax on motor vehicles than it did on homes or vessels, as long as it was an ad valorem property tax. And this one is. The vessels are not based — the tax is assessed every year on the replacement value of the vessels. A big ship that is worth less money because it would cost less to replace it because it doesn't have a double hull or a double bottom, will be taxed. It'll be taxed greater in proportion to its value. The value imposed is assessed every year. There's no challenge here. It's very important to understand that there's no challenge by the petitioners with respect to the evaluations placed on these ships. There's no contention that the value placed upon these ships by this ad valorem property tax is based upon cubic capacity. They have
do you contest the point that was made in the reply brief that back at the end of the 18th century, tonnage was considered a proxy for value, that it was the customary mode of measuring the value of a ship?
I do contest that, Justice Ginsburg. The only citation for that is Justice Miller. Justice Miller is cited for that in a lecture that he gave after he left the court. He was on the court from 1862 to 1890. He joined the court in the Inman case, the Wheeling case, the Parkersburg case, and here's the quote from the Inman from the Clyde Molloy case in 1935, which is quoting the Inman case from during that period of time. At the time the Constitution was adopted, tonnage was a well-understood commercial term signifying the internal capacity of the vessel. This Court has said that over and over again. In the Wheeling case, when it
which
said —
Which, for a commercial vessel, is a rough calculation of how much it's worth. The more cargo you can carry, the more valuable the commercial ship.
That is not correct, Justice Scalia, and it's not correct in this case. Experts put an assessment on these ships based upon their replacement value. How the ship is constructed, whether it has a double hull. These have to be Jones Act compliant ships. The newer ones are more valuable. If they move faster, they're more valuable. If they're more efficient, they're more valuable. One of the ships in this case is valued 10 times more as higher value than a ship that carries more capacity,
but all you're
it's
saying,
newer. And
all you're saying is that there are other factors that preclude using tonnage simply as a single crude measure. But isn't it fair to say that other things being equal, the engine capacity, the hull construction, etc. The tonnage is a rough measurement of the value of the ship for just the reason that Justice Scalia gave. It determines the amount of cargo the ship can carry and what it can charge for it, and that is capitalized into the value of the ship. Isn't that true?
Well, if everything else was equal, the bigger, the more capacity, the more valuable a vessel might be. That's true. But that is not the case. Different ships are different sizes. They're made out of different materials. They have different structural capabilities.
So as long as you're taxing on the basis of the value of the ship, then you have no tonnage clause problem. Is that your — the tonnage clause was a specific type of measure, and if you're taxing based on the assessed value of the property, it isn't a tonnage clause. Is that your —
That is what this Court has said. In the Wheeling case, where we were talking about steamships, the Court said that same statement that you just made about an ad valorem property tax 10 times.
But what about a porthole tax?
Pardon me?
Is a porthole tax, in your view, okay?
A what?
A porthole tax. They charge for portholes. Anyone who has a porthole who comes into our city pays a tax. That's not a tonnage tax.
That's not a tonnage tax.
So, in your view, a mast tax.
To the extent that the tax is on a vessel as an instrument of commercial conveyance, what this Court has said —
Oh, but the porthole tax applies, by the way, to that ship's captain who's retired, who's built his house with portholes instead of windows. So there are 2 or 3% of the — I mean, it's only 99.9%.
Let's start with the basics. When the Constitution was written, the Constitution did not intend to take away the power from the states to impose taxes. The provision on the import-export prohibition on states and the tonnage clause was an instrument to protect commerce. It wasn't an instrument to reduce the power of states to impose taxes. The baseline is states have the power to impose taxes unless there's an explicit, and the Court has said narrow, limitation on that tax power in the Constitution. Now, what this Court has said over and over again, Justice Breyer, it hasn't had a chance to deal with portholes, but it has had a chance to do with most of these various earlier cases in the 1860s and 70s had to do with tax on tonnage. And there was one case where New Orleans levied a tax just for the entry and departure of the ship, and the Court said, well, that's a tax on the ship as a commercial instrument of commerce, and that would be covered also. But nothing else has been covered, and the Court has gone out of its way to say that communities, states, are entitled to tax people that possess property within their jurisdiction. Because
if you're right that any type of ad valorem tax is okay, well, then why in the world would the framers have adopted a prohibition on a tonnage tax if you could just say it's a tax on value, which is going to have the same impact?
Because if you are taxing, I think that the Court had reasons for the inclusion it came to. What I'm saying is not what I've invented. It's what the Court has said repeatedly, that because property may be taxed as property because the users and owners of property are the source of revenue for the communities.
Well, putting aside what the Court has said, I'm looking at what the framers have said. What good does a tonnage tax prohibition do?
If it's a state using a tax on a vessel, qua vessel, as an instrument to limit commerce, that is something that the framers did not want to do. They prohibited taxes.
It offended them aesthetically?
No, because for
so all the state has to say is we're not taxing you qua vessel.
No, Justice Scalia. What the framers were concerned about, what I was trying to say in response to the Chief Justice's question, is that there was a limitation on the state's power to tax imports or exports because of the fact that that would put the states on the coast at an advantage and they'd pass the burdens on to the inland states. The tonnage clause was put there as a specific provision to implement and to prevent circumvention of the export-import prohibition.
Mr. Russell, let me ask you something about discrimination. Let's assume that I think it is relevant whether the tax is a discriminatory tax
property tax just leveled on ships or not. If that is my position, why should I count as establishing non-discrimination the fact that Alaska or Valdez is also taxing, most of its other property tax revenue comes from taxing oil equipment, right? And the burden of all of that tax, just like the burden of this vessel tax, is paid by people in New Jersey. I mean, you know, that it's getting somebody else to bear the burden of your taxation.
You would be
taxing that equipment raises the price of oil, almost all of which oil goes out of Alaska and is paid for by people in other states. Why should I count that property tax as proving that either the state of Alaska or Valdez is not being discriminatory just because it can't possibly violate the tonnage clause doesn't mean that it isn't as much discriminatory against other states.
That might be a due process clause problem, but it wouldn't be a tonnage clause problem. I would submit, Justice Scalia, you would be very upset at Silicon Valley, because the property tax imposed in Silicon Valley gets all put on those chips that we used in all of these computers, and everybody else in the country is using those computers. So the property that is taxed in that community is the property that creates the value of that community.
And if California taxed vessels, I would not allow California to come in and say, oh, we're just subjecting them to the same tax that our own citizens are subjecting.
And Justice Scalia,
I wouldn't let them point to the Silicon Valley tax.
You would say that vessels are exempt from property tax.
That may be the only way they can accomplish what they want to, because as the Chief Justice's question suggested a moment ago, if in the 18th century the Port of Boston said, we're not going to charge tonnage anymore, we're simply going to tax on the value of the ship, that is going to have exactly the same effect that a tonnage tax would have. So maybe exemption is the only way it can
be done. It's going to require an amendment to the Constitution, because what the framers talked about was a tonnage clause.
And they did not exempt. Mr. Olson, we have said it's not just tonnage. It said that the clause bars states, we said, from imposing a charge, even if not measured by a vessel's tonnage, for the privilege of entering, trading in, or lying in a port. So we have ruled out the position that it's got to be an old-fashioned tonnage charge and can't be based on the assessed value of the property.
Well, I guess I have to resort to the fact that every time this Court has considered it, or at least in almost every case, the Court has gone out of its way to say they were not intending to prohibit states from taxing the value of property if it's ad valorem tax.
In all of those cases, the vessels were being taxed as one item of property in a general movable property, personal property tax. I asked you before, I think, is there any other tax like this that an ad valorem tax that is applied to one single category of property?
This is an ad valorem tax. It has various different statutes and ordinances that it comes from, but there's ad valorem taxes in Valdez across the board for all kinds of property.
This statute deals with one category of property. Is there another statute like this one?
Well, this statute is — every other statute in the same manner imposes taxes on property based upon their value. This was a separate ordinance that decided to remove an exemption that had existed for 27 years.
That was the state taxes were no part of the Alaska Supreme Court's decision in this case.
Well, I think what we're talking about is whether or not this community can impose a tax on the people that own property in this community. There's no denial that there's a proper tax situs here. The average length of the time in port of these ships was 45 days. The entire fleet has a tax situs in Valdez. So this property, like other property in the same manner, is being taxed by the city of Valdez. The Wheeling case was a case a little bit like this in the sense that it was West Virginia that passed a statute that allowed Wheeling to impose the tax on steamships.
And on what else in that tax that was before the court? What else did Wheeling tax?
The only thing that the court talked about, because it was an as-applied case, the taxpayer was wanting a refund from the taxes, and this taxpayer owned steamships that went back and forth from Wheeling. And the court talked about the fact that this wasn't a tonnage clause, this was a state-authorized municipal.
What about the Greer? You haven't mentioned that. Greer in Norris v. City of Boston. Where he says the tonnage, you know what he says. It's on the front page of their brief. All right, that seemed to me to say, don't interpret the tonnage clause to apply to tonnage. Interpret it if it's same thing, if it's masts, mariners, power of the steam engine, number of passengers, the master or owner of the vessel. All those fall within the tonnage clause. That's what that paragraph seems to say.
And what the thrust of the overall bulk of the cases, including the language by this court repeatedly, is that property taxation based upon the value of property, not imposing a tax on the ship. There are various ways, I suppose, one could say that every time a ship enters a harbor without developing a tax situs, I think Justice Alito's question focused on that. This is property. This is not, you don't get charged a fee for entering the port, or one of those cases when we imposed a tax because it called it a wharfage tax, but you didn't even have to touch the wharf in order to pay the tax.
May I ask you a question that I don't think has come up, but I just wonder if anybody's argued this. A duty of tonnage, it seems to me, might refer to the cargo rather than the ship. So that if a ship made 10 voyages, it might have 10 times the tonnage of another vessel of exactly the same value. Has anybody argued that that's what tonnage clause refers to?
I think you're correct, Justice Stevens, that what the framers were concerned about is a substitute for an export or import tax by taxing what was in the ship, and the tonnage referred to that, but it wasn't the value of the vessel itself, because the framers wouldn't have wanted to take away the power of the states to tax commercial activity using property in their communities in the same manner that they taxed other
properties. That is all it applied to, then the wharfage tax would have been perfectly okay.
The wharfage tax has been upheld by this court frequently. The only reason why it was struck down in that case is that you didn't have to put into a wharf. So the court knew, well, it wasn't really a wharfage tax, but if it was really a wharfage tax, the court has upheld it.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Rothfeld, you have 3 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of quick points. First, on this confusing question of what the state of Alaska does and the nature of its tax, Mr. Olson began by saying that the state of Alaska imposes this tax through the city of Valdez. That is right. It is a tax imposed by the state of Alaska that is collected by the city of Valdez. If the city did not collect the tax, it would go directly to the state of Alaska. It is an Alaska tax.
Where does the money go? If the city of Valdez collects it, where does it go?
If the city collects it, it keeps it, but it's been authorized to do that by the state.
Well, then I think we ought to regard it as a city tax, not a state tax. They collect it, they keep it. That sounds like a city tax.
But it's imposed by the state. The state decides what is subject to tax. It identifies the property that is.
Well, I suppose the state can regulate what cities and municipalities and counties can do throughout the state. That doesn't make everything those cities and counties do the actions of the state.
That's true, but this particular tax is a tax that is imposed by the state at the state level. It's notable that Valdez has never before, until he reached this court, said that this is a tax on oil and gas property. That property is subject to tax by the state. The state authorizes Valdez to collect the tax, but it is imposed by the tax, and the state determines which items are subject to tax. So this is out of Valdez's discretion. Valdez chose to tax only particular types of personal property, and that is vessels. Second, on the question of what the tonnage clause was designed to do. And the Wheeling case, Wheeling says that a property tax is okay when the tax is imposed on vessels the same as other property owned by its citizens. That is not what is going on here. The contemporaneous understanding of the rule at the time was that taxes that singled out vessels were unconstitutional. We cite authority for this proposition on our reply brief. To address Justice Ginsburg's question as to whether there are other taxes like this, we have not found any other tax anywhere that has been imposed singling out vessels as for property taxation, either now or in the past. We've not found any case addressing that, not only not in this court, but in any other court. And the fact
what about the broader tax situation in 1789? Did ports have sources of or exercise the authority at that time to tax property generally, e.g., real estate in the city, to support the activities of the ports, or were they dependent solely upon things like import-export taxes, et cetera?
My understanding is that real estate certainly was subject to tax, and that ports would have the authority to tax other types of property. Vessels were set aside as a particular item by the tonnage clause.
So that the argument that they're taxing other things, therefore it's okay to tax this, would have been an argument just as potent in the 18th century or impotent, as the case may be, as it is now.
That's right.
Okay.
And so setting aside vessels in a unique category when other things could be taxed would have been problematic at the time.
How, under your view, how is a city supposed to impose a property tax on a vessel?
It should impose the tax by imposing a tax on personal property generally. And if it does, it would fall on vessels as items of personal property. It is significant that, well, if I may, Your Honor, just to finish, what Valdez has done, if it could have taxed all of that types of stuff, or it could have taxed particular types of it, but it has seized on only one particular type of personal property be subject to taxation.
So you think we should resolve the tax by seeing how generally applicable property taxes are in Valdez?
I think it's an easy case when, as in this situation, there is only one item of property that's taxed, and that's a vessel.
Well, but your brother suggests the other items of property are taxed under other provisions of the tax ordinance.
Again, Valdez does not. The state does. Valdez does not. And so I think that there is no need for the court to sort of go beyond and decide how broadly applicable. As I suggested earlier, our test would be predominantly on vessels. It is unconstitutional, and that clearly is the case here.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.